Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast with Tim Elmore. This is Andrew McPeak here, your trusty co-host. Tim, I hope I'm good at my job. I'm trying to just be the best I can.
Andrew, for a gentleman that woke up at 4 a.m. this morning, I think you're doing quite well. We got up early today.
We did have a little bit
of Lincoln, Nebraska.
Early flight. Yeah, we had to get up a little early to make it here, and we laughed about how Lord knows what's going to come out of our mouths during this podcast. Oh, I lost Tim. I think I just lost.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
Tim, I'm excited, though, to be doing this podcast.
Yeah, it's a great topic.
Yeah, I feel like our last conversation was really good, and I can't wait to talk about where...
Who knows?
Who knows if it's good? I mean, I felt good about it, but I'm excited about what we're going to talk about today. You know, there's a lot of important things that are going on right now. You know, this time of year is a little bit of a spooky time
yeah,
of year.
It's Halloween coming up.
Halloween is coming up. We know there's a lot of stories going on in the world today. In particular, there are horror stories going on right now in the world today. And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, our topic today is about horror stories with the next generation. You may or may not, I love that. I just had so much fun doing that.
Yes, you did.
You may
you
or
did.
May not, as a leader of the next generation, you probably have your own horror stories, right? You didn't probably nobody got murdered like a horror movie, but we all have stories, I think, of
things that have gone awry.
You look back, you're probably laughing, but in the moment, you were horrified at the.
That's right.
The facing this issue or this problem. So Tim and I started talking about horror stories that we have in our leadership of the next generation. Tim, you told me a hilarious story
earlier.
It did
not take long for us to come up with a list. We were very aware that people listening to this podcast are educators, they're parents, they're coaches, they're administrators, but almost everybody listening has somewhat of a direct connection to the next generation.
Yeah, yeah.
So Andrew, I'll never forget, years and years ago, I was asked to speak at a teen camp. So this is a youth camp, and it was in the Pacific Northwest, and it was a very chilly time of year, but it was a week-long thing, and my host forgot to tell me to bring my own sleeping bag.
An important detail, forgotten.
It was, specifically that week, because they put me in this cabin that had cracks between the logs, so the wind is whistling through. I've got no sleeping bag. I'm sleeping in my clothes on a mattress, no covers, and by the way, a stained mattress. Yeah, I'm not kidding.
It doesn't get any better
than that. No, it doesn't. But this is teen camp. What I discovered as the week went on, day by day by day, they wanted me to do more and more things besides speak to the teens and teach the teens.
Okay.
I ended up working in the kitchen. I ended up raising the flag at the flagpole in the morning. Yes. And leading the games. So by Wednesday, I said, is there anything else you need me to do? So it just...
They probably were not paying you enough for that.
Oh, I'm not even going to tell you what...
And you were a popsicle of a presenter because you're
right.
So frozen for the night before.
I gave them the cold shoulder because I had to. Yeah. Okay. How about you? What do you have some memories of?
Well, it got me thinking. I used to work for a nonprofit that does alternative break programs in inner city Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were leading this group of students from a well-known university I won't name, but we probably had about 8 students. They were a student-led group, so no adults with them whatsoever, but they're adults themselves, so they're leading. They were actually pretty good all week, but I noticed they were kind of tired and slow and all those kinds of things, so I'm taking them around. They're doing all kinds of service projects, and it gets to the end of the week on Friday, and somebody kind of says something, and I start to listen in, and I realize that every single night, this group of 8 students, after they had served the least of these in Atlanta, went out clubbing. And
oh,
I mean,
boy.
Drinking and partying and all of this stuff. Like, you're on a service trip. But they were going to have spring break and a service
trip. That's right. We're getting
all wrapped into one. And it was just, man, it was a nightmare. So
crazy, crazy, crazy. I, not very long ago, was with one of our colleagues, Tyler, at a middle school. So I love spending time with middle school, high school, and university students. But middle school would probably be my area where my gift is stretched the most. May I say that here? So I'm getting older.
Those who lead middle schoolers know what you're talking about.
They know exactly
right now,
what I'm talking about. Yeah. You see, it's either a calling or a curse, one of the two. So I'm at this big middle school assembly. So hundreds of kids are pouring into the gymnasium. We've shown up plenty early, but the people that are going to do tech have not shown up until about 10 minutes ahead of time. So now it's scramble time, but the screen didn't work. the projector was dark, so nothing really showed up well, and the audio did not work.
Oh, no.
So basically, all the stuff, you know, I'm very image rich in
my
presentations.
Yeah, we're visual presentations.
None of that's working. So I had to corral 800 middle school kids without the help of all the games, music, and exercises that I planned. I'm yelling. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's the opposite of the persona
that
like
I wanted. You need like a bullhorn, basically.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and pretty soon, instead of, you know, imparting great truth to these students, you're screaming, shut up, you know.
They can't hear me in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, that was as good as it gets.
I had a similar experience one time where I showed up at a school and I asked where the IT guy was, and the guy leans over and he says, "Can you run to the office and call Billy out of class?" Billy was the IT guy, you know.
Right.
But then of course, you know, I've utilized interns in a lot of different positions that I've had, but I remember the super awkward situation. I can talk to an intern about any professional thing.
Yeah.
But I had an intern one time who just had the worst body odor. And
oh,
it's like,
no.
What do you do? You know, how do you even breach that conversation? And but we go through this a lot. You know, those of us who lead the next generation, not everything's polished. Not everything's clear. There are moments where we want to laugh and moments where we want to cry.
That's true.
Which makes me think about this article that you showed me and sent me this week.
Yeah, you need to read that, Andrew. Do you have it there?
Yeah, I do. Okay. So it's from Board Panda. So wonder what Tim does with his extra time.
Yeah, that's right. This is it.
He's on Board Panda.
Some people read scholarly journals.
Yeah.
I'm on social media. Yeah, that's right.
It's so funny. So this is an article called 10 Picks, and we'll put it on the podcast notes so you can check it out. 10 pictures about anxiety that will make you laugh, then cry. So
okay.
these are social posts.
Yes. So let me just clarify. We just shared our horror stories. The students that we work with, and most people listening would understand this, have their own horror anxiety stories themselves. Life is different today. But these are funny posts where they're... we're able to giggle at some of the anxiety that happens. So
go ahead. Okay, so I'm going to read just a couple of these. If you want to read the whole list, check it out. So this is somebody posts, they're waiting on somebody who is late. And so they start thinking and asking themselves a lot of questions. Were we supposed to meet at this time? Is this really the place we were going to meet up? Is it actually Thursday today? Were we even meeting on Thursday? Do I actually know this person? Do they really exist? Do I exist?
It gets existential suddenly.
I love that.
When we're anxious, we get very existential.
Yeah, the whole thing just kind of drifts into anarchy a little bit. Okay, so this is a person having conversation with their own anxiety. So their anxiety is personified here.
Yeah.
So the anxiety says, okay, but what if? And then the person says, homie, we went over this like 100 times yesterday. We totally resolved this problem. And anxiety said, but yeah, I've looked at it from a new angle, and there's like 20 more reasons why you should worry about it. And the person responds, go on.
Yeah, that's right.
Like we resolve our anxiety until we're ready to listen to the worst
case
scenario. Here's another one. Okay, so this is a person having a conversation with their brain. They say to their brain, they say, good night. And the brain says, psst. And the person says, what? And the brain says, what disease do you think we have?
And that is our go to bed, good night.
That's
thought.
Right. Yeah. I cannot name the number of times that you know you're laying late at night, and this idea comes to your brain like I'm probably going to die of cancer at some point.
Probably overnight. Yeah.
So okay, the last one. This person says, "I'm a very laid back person. I only care about two things: every person on earth and their opinion of me, the crushing psychological weight of being alive."
Other than that, we're doing fine.
Other than that, I'm great. Such a sign of where kids are today, you know, the issues that we face. And the horror stories are there because this is a real deal. The future sometimes can be a scary thought. And it's especially scary for students today because all students think about is the future, right? Their whole life is in front of them, not behind them.
Yeah.
And so as they think about their future, and honestly, as we, as their leaders, think about their future for them, we start to get concerned. There's a lot of question marks in the future, you know, artificial intelligence and technological advances and all of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And I know as we were talking about this week, it got us thinking about what are the things, you know, there's a lot of unknowns in the future, but there's got to be some things that we know that we'll need no matter what the future brings, you know? And we were thinking about it this week, and our marketing director, Chris, actually showed us this article from BBC that they posted just a couple weeks ago. And this is, the article is called "The Automation Resistant Skills We Should Nurture."
I love that.
In our students, yeah. Automation resistant skills. Basically, it's all these people who fear automation is going to take over the world and take over our jobs. And what are we even going to do in the future? This post is basically realizing there are some skills that we can develop that no automation, no technological advance, no change in our world can change the value of. And there was this really great quote they actually pulled from a study. So this is a 2016 World Bank review of 27 studies of employers. They found that 79% of these employers ranked a social-emotional skill, such as honesty or the ability to work within a team, as the most important qualification for workers. So 80% of those employers that they interviewed in this said, you know, the most important qualification that a recent graduate can have is actually something from the list of social-emotional skills, not hard skills.
Yeah.
Because the things that are really automation-proof, that are future-proof, if you will, really come from within, right? They're those life skills, those things that we talk about. So
this is really, in many ways, what we're about, Andrew. We're about the developing leadership in the next generation, but it begins with these fundamental skills. In fact, I like to call this pass forward, instead of fast forward. You look back, these have always been skills that humankind has needed, but maybe more so when we look forward into the future where things are automated. Artificial intelligence is a part of every appliance we have in our home and every device we hold in our hand. And yet we go back to the humanity of us and say, how do we relate to each other? And what can a machine never do, even if it's programmed to have empathy for someone?
Or it's pretend a program. It has empathy.
Yeah, that's right. So can I read something real quick?
Yeah,
in 2014, Inside Higher Ed did a survey of chief academic officers. These would be university officers. 96% said they thought they were doing a good job in preparing students for a career.
96.
Yes. Wow. So almost all of them.
Yeah.
But they may have been grading on a curve.
As we often do.
The proof is in the pudding. In a new survey released by Gallup much later, measuring how business leaders and the American public in general view the state and the value of higher education, just 14% of Americans and only 11% of business leaders strongly agreed that the graduates were really having the necessary skills they need for a career. And that's today. Forget tomorrow. That's just today.
So 96% of them said, we're doing a great job.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, the people who were looking at the product of what they were doing said, actually, it's closer to 14%. Yeah.
But you know, Andrew, this is so indicative. I cannot tell you how many surveys I have read where the leader of an organization, the president of a company, the pastor of a church thinks it's going well. Yeah. And then they ask the people and they go, not so much. So, that's what we want to address today. What are those skill sets that are free from becoming antiquated in the future?
Yeah, it's a challenge for us as leaders because a lot of times we can't see our own leadership. So knowing that there are some things out there that, you know what, no matter what I do, if I make sure that my students have these things, these skills, these social emotional learning skills, I'm going to guarantee that they have at least a chance for success in the future.
That's right.
So this is something, you know, we just had our book, Marching Off the Map, come out. This is something that we talked about in there. We talk about it whenever we can because I think you and I are both so passionate about this issue and particularly leadership and life skills and how are we developing them in the lives of students. And so we had a section in chapter 6 of our book where we talked about what are the 8 career-ready skills that every student is going to need, no matter what career they're going into, no matter what they're interested in doing in the future. We really said there's 8 skills that we really believe are future-proof.
Yeah.
You know, they're automation-resistant.
Yeah.
So let's explore some of those because I think that's a great way for us to kind of address this topic is to talk about what are those things that, you know, we have lots of horror stories in our past, but we want to look to the future and know that we can have some success.
Absolutely. So let me differentiate this list from other lists, Andrew.
Okay.
We did a book at Growing Leaders called Habitudes for Career-Ready Students. There are 12 standards that the United States Department of Education believes are necessary. We fully agree. In fact, we developed habitudes around them. This is even more timely, I think, because now that we're looking forward, let's say to the year 2030, we talked about this with Rich Codd, our friend, and the middle school kid today who's going to be looking for a job in 2030 as a 20-something.
Yeah.
How will it look? We believe these are going to be timely and timeless both. So let's jump in. One of the terms, which every listener is going to be familiar with, but maybe you didn't realize it was so high on the list, is the whole idea of critical thinking. Critical thinking.
Critical thinking.
According to the American Association of Colleges and Universities, employers are more interested in discovering a graduate can think critically rather than focusing on what their major was in college, let's say. So in short, I know there's a lot of definitions for critical thinking, but critical thinking is evidence-based reasoning.
Evidence-based reasoning.
So I could look at something and see all angles. It's almost like putting on the glasses at a 3D movie, and suddenly you see layers of what's coming at you on the screen, not just two-dimensional, it's three-dimensional.
Yeah, and it strikes me that there's so many students today who are constantly and only thinking about the world from their point of view that they haven't really developed this ability.
Yeah, and maybe not even realize they're about to enter maybe an organization that's got 3 to 4 generations with different paradigms staring back at them in the workplace. So Patricia Greenfield at UCLA, she says that life skills such as critical thinking and perseverance, she adds, have declined with the prevalence of technology. That's why we're bringing this up. So we all know technology is not going away, and it's done many good things for us. We would agree with that.
Yeah.
But what it's done, what it's damaged, is our ability to do the thinking on our own. We often look for Google to answer a question
rather than
thinking critically about it. So let's talk for just a minute. I'll start us off, but let's talk for a minute. How could one of our listeners, or all of our listeners for that matter, not just one, we don't care about just one person, begin to develop critical thinking in everyday life, in everyday classrooms? So the one practice I'd love to encourage you to do, albeit it's going to take some time, is to unpack everything, every issue that comes up. I mean, every issue that might come up as a current event in the classroom. If you're going to watch a TV show with a student or have a conversation or go see a movie, one of the things I tried to do with my own children, I've said this before on this podcast, is we'd unpack everything. Our kids actually were tired of me doing this in elementary school, but they got into the habit. It was like a muscle that got built. They knew we needed to pick apart the plot, the characters, the story, the arc, the critical issues. Are the stakes high enough in that story in the movie? But all of that really helped them, I think, think critically about any issue. By the way, when an election comes up in November or whatever, I'm thinking critically.
Yeah.
Not just this is how my party votes, but I'm thinking about this.
You taught them to stop and basically not take things for a grain of salt, but to say, where are all the angles on that? Mm-hmm. Has that been really well thought through?
Yeah.
It reminds me of a practice I really encourage people to do is to, whenever you have a question that you want answered, so move Google out of the equation.
Yeah.
But really, how often are you asking your students questions that they can get to an answer by just stopping and thinking critically about it, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
And I think there's a lot of great questions out there like that. So
what this is all about, in essence, Andrew, is not only teaching kids what to think, but how to think.
Yeah.
And that's what I think might be missing, again, because of all the devices we have next to us that does our thinking for us.
Yeah.
I don't have to memorize anything today. I got a phone, you know, that has all the phone numbers and addresses and contacts and MapQuest or whatever, all I used to use. It's now all in my device.
And it's not just robbing us of that information. It's actually robbing us of that processing as well, the ability to find that answer. That's good. Okay, so the first one, critical thinking. What's number two?
Number two is resourcefulness and resilience.
Resourcefulness and resilience.
So there's an echo in the room.
Hey, wait, what's going on?
So I put these two together, and here's why. I believe to become resourceful is even of greater value than, let's just say, to have a good memory. And I'm for memory.
Yeah.
But again, I need my memory, just like I said, less today because I've got this device, this tablet or this phone that remembers a lot of things for me. Albert Einstein even said, why should I memorize something I can look up? And that was before portable devices were around.
Yeah.
So, but if I can be resourceful, if that muscle of resourcefulness has been developed in me, I can find answers wherever they are. So if I have to reinvent myself on a job and my employer says, Chuck, I need you. Well, my name's not Chuck. Tim. Tim, I need you to do this. Yeah, that's right. I get confused. I need you to do this. I can find those answers. I'm not paralyzed by saying, I've never done this before. I'm positively challenged by the thing. I get to be resourceful now.
Yeah.
If these students we're teaching today can be resourceful, we have given them a divine gift.
Wow.
But it's the preparation of, I can find answers even if I don't have them right now in my brain.
You know, it reminds me, I met a guy out in California. I was out there doing an event a couple weeks ago. He was probably 55, maybe. Mm-hmm. And he...
So very old? Is
very,
that what you're
saying? Very... Yeah, that's yeah, what I just yeah. like super, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
He 5 years earlier, he was a diesel mechanic, had been for 30 years, and he realized his profession was starting to decline. And he really wanted to... He said he wanted to find a profession where he could... continue to work well into his 60s and not have to worry about his body shutting down. So he went back to school and learned to be a computer engineer.
Wow.
And I just thought that was so amazing that somebody, you know, who's well into their career can stop, look around and say, what do I need to do, you know, to have success? And I don't know, are our students going to be in the same position? Are they going to be able to stop, you know, and say, I've been working at this for 10 years, but I'm realizing in order to be successful, I need to, you know, make some shifts and changes.
No doubt about it. So in short, this resourcefulness idea is the ability to locate an answer. And we believe it's a greater value than, as I just mentioned, memorizing data that may be antiquated a year from now, you know, which is what happens when all you do is memorize. Resilience, talk about resilience now. It's part two of this double-edged skill. Resilience is huge because in a world of rapid change, I'm going to have to bounce back fast.
Yeah.
For instance, maybe I practice resourcefulness, I learn a new trade, but then that trade goes away or morphs, you know, while I'm there.
And well, based now, on the last several years, we know that's probably going to happen.
Absolutely. So these go together. I need to be resourceful, find answers, but then when that answer goes away, and it probably will, I've got to bounce right back with a positive attitude and say, all right, I'm going to learn something new now.
That's huge.
I feel like these are meta competencies.
Yeah.
I know you like that word meta.
I love it.
Yes. So if we can get these, in fact, if we got these and nothing else, we have positioned a young person, a student, a graduate, in great, great shape for the future.
Yeah, that's huge. Okay, so let's think about maybe some ways that we can build that, some ideas that we might have. I know one thing I was just thinking about was we actually suggest for a lot of our educator friends out there to have at least one of their tests be open book, open note, right?
Yeah.
And even if you do that and then add a timed element on there, so the challenge for the student is not memorizing a bunch of information, but figuring out how resourceful can they be? Do they know where to go to find the right answer? Can they do that in a short period of time? These are all skills that are going to be very valuable in that workplace in the future.
No doubt. I love that exercise. Now, here's an exercise for adults. So this past year, I did a parent event. Actually, I did a few of them. But in one of my parent events, just to start things off, because I think I felt like I was with parents that were very intelligent and also very educated, I thought I need to get them thinking to reinvent themselves. And so I said to them, if you had to make a test that every adult had to take before becoming a parent, what questions should be on that test?
Wow.
It was so much fun. First of all, you had a gazillion, but you know what? They were coming up with very good answers. And suddenly I realized this is coming from their failures.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's when you really learn. It's when you fail. But that positioned us because now they're going, I didn't know that then. I've got to relearn. There's that resilience thing and that resourcefulness thing. And that night became a resourceful time for them to think through what are they
where
really
push themselves.
Yeah, that's right.
That's great.
So, yeah.
This is awesome. Okay. So let's go on to number three.
Yeah. The third one is kind of a different term, but I think all of you would agree once you understand it, it's important. We're calling it, Andrew, creative processing. Creative processing. Due to the rapid rate of change, which again, I've said that already in this podcast, we're going to have to just be creative. And far too many, both adults and students I find today, say, well, that's just not me. I'm just not a creative person.
Yeah, I'm not a creative person.
Because we think of Walt Disney or Steve Jobs or whatever. We go, I'm not
that.
Yeah,
but all of us compared to those people are not creative.
That's right, so exactly. We are
I know I'm not.
Jump in line if you're comparing yourself to Steve Jobs. But I would say that's not true. We're all very creative. We just have a muscle that's atrophied called creativity.
Yeah.
So I have argued in this Marching Off the Mat book and then also in other Habitudes books we've put together that creativity is really connecting two existing ideas or items to create a third. So you're looking at the current world, which you don't have to create a thing for that. Just look around.
Yeah.
But you put two ideas together that are not normally together, And suddenly you have an idea. Here's a great example. Johann Gutenberg. We know him for the creation of the printing press.
Yeah.
Do you know why he came up with the printing press? He was very interested in coming up with a way for publications to get out. So that was on his mind. But he was working in a wine press. He thought, what if we pressed words, not wine? And suddenly, we have not only a cool invention, we have a whole new industry. I think of the three guys that put together Cirque du Soleil. You know, we've talked about this before.
Oh, yeah.
An acrobat, an entertainer, just an entertainer, and then a gymnast. And they came together in, I think it was the early 1980s, and they came up with this idea, what if we combined these three industries, none of which were drawing millions of fans,
yeah,
and now they are, because Cirque du Soleil is everywhere. It's not only in Vegas, it's everywhere you go. But it was the combination of a circus, a gymnastics meet, and acrobatics, and entertainment.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've got something, but it was all built from existing ideas, but it created a fundamentally new idea.
Yeah, so the creativity comes in my ability to see the potential
yes.
in things that currently exist.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder how many of our students have that ability, you know, to look around them and see what could be, not just what is, you know.
So here's a good exercise. I think it would be great for educators, let's say, to bring in to class a bag full of unrelated items. It could be pots and pans from the kitchen. It could be candy bars. It could be you name it, but completely funky, unrelated items. But have students pull two out of the bag or three, but say, how could these be combined? Hypothetically, you don't need to invent something in 30 minutes, but and you begin to have them present, this is how these two ideas could be combined. I think something like this happened over 100 years ago with the Wright brothers.
Indeed.
You know, one of our habitudes
yeah.
is called bikes and birds. And this is a great, great habitude. If you're unfamiliar with this word habitude, listeners, habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. We believe it's the stickiest way to teach a leadership principle. But bikes and birds is really about the story of Orville and Wilbur Wright. They had been studying the flight of birds for months and months and months, looking at the wings and how they tilted to give them flight, to make them airborne.
Yeah.
By trade, they were bicycle machinists. They fixed bikes. And if you look at the first airplane at Kitty Hawk, it looked like a flying bicycle.
Yeah, it's like a bicycle with wings.
It was bikes
basically.
And birds put together. And they came up with a whole new industry, and Delta and American Airlines are very happy for that.
Yeah, they are.
But all if they were here today, they'd say, we didn't really make anything. We just combined two ideas, and we were creatively processing those ideas.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's keep going. So
okay.
We're short on time. Let's go to number four.
Gotcha. The next one is a term that I just learned probably a year and a half ago, Andrew. So I'm a newbie at this. But the term is called analytical writing. If you were to Google that term and look up schools that are doing this, you would see these schools making leaps forward in the education of their students and the quality of the learning abilities in those students. In other words, not only are grades going up, the students are just better learners. So let me try to define analytical writing. It's not just writing, although ultimately it means you put your words in print, but it's the ability really to form an argument in your head and then articulate it, eventually going to print.
I'm sure our listeners have never met an inarticulate young person before, right?
No. What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Just kidding. I'm totally kidding. So you're exactly right. And by the way, isn't that adolescence?
Yeah,
and oftentimes,
of course.
I feel something deeply, but I'm just mad and I can't really say it. I have found that when students find the ability to articulate how they're feeling or how they're thinking, their self-esteem goes up, their sense of well-being.
So many areas.
Yeah. So analytic writing, again, there are schools in New England right now, K-12, that are doing this so well, are helping students form these ideas and arguments, actually, in one sense, debate them or present them, and ultimately put them in print. And what they discovered, this is the coolest discovery of all, when you get this ability, almost all your other coursework improves. I mean, from numbers and math.
Really?
It's so weird how this part of your brain, when it's polished and developed, affects almost every other subject. Math, science, social studies have all been reported. Scores are going up when they learn analytic
writing.
Yeah,
when you think about it, it does make sense, right? Your ability to clearly articulate reasoning for something and to be able to communicate, like that that muscle is so helpful yeah. in all those different areas.
Absolutely.
I would imagine that they probably also saw a rise in student disciplinary rates and some of those other things, because there's not that angst. I can actually clearly communicate what's going on inside of my head, you know?
Yeah, no, I have no doubt. So real quick, some practical ideas. Let me just throw out one. I really believe that part of the skill that needs to be developed is the idea of debate. I mentioned that word just a couple of minutes ago. So perhaps you form an informal, if not a formal, debate team, or maybe you divide your classes up into different groups where an argument that is gray, not black and white, is thrown out there, and students are asked to really articulate what they believe and how they feel and why. So this is akin to critical thinking, but it goes past just thinking critically. Now I'm articulating persuasively.
Yeah.
And then I can put it in print. I can begin to form. And then, you know, of course, you need to score. You need to grade and say, this is a clear argument you made. Oh, nope, Josh or Jessica, this is not a clear argument.
Help them kind of process through that.
Yeah, but this just helps almost everything.
That's so awesome. Yeah. It actually makes me think of A Christmas Story, where he really wants that Red Ryder BB gun, you know?
Yeah.
And he's got to figure out a way to articulate it to his teacher. And I wonder if we could challenge our kids to say, what's something you really want?
Yeah.
Can you articulate, you know, especially written, what the reason is for why you need that. And if you can't, then it's time to ask a question. Do I really need it? You know,
that's
if,
good
if I don't have clarity on that. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's review really quick before we go to the last one. Critical thinking was number one.
Yep.
Resourcefulness and resilience, number two. Creative processing was the third one we talked about. And we just talked about analytical writing. So what's number five, the last one for us, Tim?
The last one may be predictable for our listeners, but we have discovered in our research that it's a critical skill set for the future. Leadership perspective.
We're pretty big fans of leadership here.
Yes, we are.
Here.
Well, I will admit, we all have a leadership bias here at Growing Leaders. But now, hear me out. This isn't just us. We're finding this is confirmed over and over and over. Now, note that I did not say leadership position.
Yep.
Not every student needs to be the CEO, the president, or the chairman of an organization. But we believe if students learn to think like leaders, they have the perspective of a leader, even if they're in the middle of the flowchart in a company, or perhaps they're starting at the bottom of that flowchart as an intern, to think like a leader moves you forward. So we think this is a perspective giver. That's really what I'm after. When I stop and try to bring definition to what a leadership perspective is, it means I see the big picture, not just my own angle. It means I'm good with people. Not just me. It means I can problem solve. It means I can prioritize the agenda on what needs to be done first. All of those pieces, which you might just say, well, that's a successful person. Bingo.
Exactly.
And that's what's going to get them asked to be a leader. So again, we understand that not all kids are gifted to leaders. They're going to be the chief officer of some company. But we do believe, we do have the bias, and I will argue this to my dying day, if we can help everyone think better, Andrew, it's like the tide. When the tide goes up, all the boats go up.
And we really do need a generation of kids who think and act like leaders. I mean, if you just think about, if you were the head of any organization, whether you were hiring kids at a Starbucks or you were working in a multi-million dollar company, wouldn't you give the raise, wouldn't you give the promotion to the young man or young woman who sees the big picture, who serves the people around them, who has all of these things kind of lined up, you know, the one who shows the most leadership potential. And we're just seeing, if you have that, if you have leadership perspective, you're going to be successful everywhere.
Well, if you're a nurse, you become a better nurse.
Exactly.
If you're a business person, you're a better business person. So the Higher Education Research Institute, based at UCLA, in the year 2000, so this was a number of years ago, published their findings in a report that was funded by the Kellogg Foundation. In this report, they said, in both private and public colleges and universities, every student is going to need leadership skills.
Wow.
The world is too complex, too uncertain for you to go out just drifting into the future saying, I hope to God I find a job.
Yeah.
But if I think like a leader, whatever job I get, I'm probably going to move forward in that job and become more valuable.
So what are some practical ways that you encourage people to start students on their leadership journey?
Well, I think it begins with a good question. If nobody got paid to follow you, why should they follow you? By the way, that's a good question for us to answer.
Yeah.
I've asked that with my team, Andrew.
Yeah, I need to take a second and ask myself that.
That's right. So that's a huge one. And then, by the way, that's why nonprofit organizations are probably the acid test of leadership. A lot of them are volunteers working there, that volunteer organization. And if they're not getting paid a dime to follow, What reason do you give them to follow? So that's number one. But secondly, we at Growing Leaders have really kind of tried to put the cookies on the bottom shelf on this issue. And we have in essence said that ultimately leaders are people who solve problems and serve people. Now, does it get higher than that? Of course it does. Yeah. It's complex thinking and strategic thinking. But if I can learn how to solve problems and serve people, so I would say educators, parents, coaches, choose an area that you think needs to be served and say, students, I'm going to give you the assignment to come up with what problem needs to be solved and what people do you think need to be served, and then go do it.
Wow.
Maybe it's a week-long exercise. Maybe it's a semester-long exercise. But this is something I did with my kids kind of informally, and we ended up serving the homeless on quite a regular basis in downtown Atlanta. Because they said, well, that's a big need, and it was.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness, did it revolutionize our family?
Yeah.
Just doing that.
And it's worth saying, I mean, we do Habitudes with you know, schools all over the country. Time and again, we see when we introduce Habitudes conversations, short conversations to build leadership skills, get some students, especially those student leaders on campus, really thinking about solving problems and serving people.
Yeah.
We see all kinds of transformations from just the culture of the school is better to I saw disciplinary rates drop, all of those things.
Yeah.
You know, at such a low level are happening. So.
No doubt about it.
This is so important, Tim.
So, Andrew, I'll close up my thoughts and you can wrap us up.
Yeah, please.
I keep thinking about those focus groups that you led this last year.
Yeah.
And one of the statements that seemed to keep coming up almost everywhere you, in fact, I think it was everywhere you went, was I worry a lot about the future and my future, the future of the world and my future.
Yeah.
If kids who are 13 years old are worried about the future, this beckons me as a caring adult, and hopefully every one of you listeners, to say, what can we do to at least diminish that worry, to get them ready for a future, to get them excited? You know, I don't have all the answers, but I got some skills that I think are going to be timely and timeless as I move into
When you teach them, you can promise, hey, this is going to be helpful.
That's right.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so if you're listening to this and you think this is awesome, guess what? We have three more skills that are in the book.
Yeah,
so we only got to five because of time, but if you're interested in getting more of this, you can get Marching Off the Map. That's in chapter 6 that you'll find this list. What's great about Marching Off the Map is we have it, you know, we have the physical book. We also have an ebook. We also have an audio book, which you read yourself, Tim, which is awesome. You get to hear it from the author. You can get all of that at marchingoffthemap.com. Another thing we've decided to do, because, you know, the theme is horror stories. So what we want to do for you guys is we would love for you to share some of your horror stories in leading the next generation with us. So if you tweet at Growing Leaders, if you tell us your horror stories of leading the next generation, we're going to pick somebody who tweets us, and we're going to give them a free signed copy of Marching Off the Map. So that's just something we want to offer to you. Here's the trick, though. You've got to do it before the end of Halloween. So October 31st at midnight is going to be the close of this. So make sure to tell us about stories and situations you've been in as you've led the next generation. So tweet that at Growing Leaders and tell us about that. If you have comments or questions, things, topics you want us to cover, whatever it is, we actually have an email for that. Email us at podcast@growingleaders.com. We'd love to hear from you. We take your ideas and we take them into the consideration and planning of the podcast. So we really want to get your voice there. And then lastly, will you do us a favor? If you love this podcast, will you go to iTunes right now and rate this podcast? And I would even consider, you know, if you would think about sharing it with some people you know, putting it on social media, and just telling people about this podcast. Anybody who you think would benefit from listening to this, we would really appreciate that. Again, my name is Andrew McPeak. I'm here with Tim Elmore. Thank you guys so much for listening. We hope you learn some more, and we'll hope you check out Marching Off the Map, and we'll talk to you guys. See you guys next time.